Everybody, and welcome to another installment of Pod Stallions, the podcast for the website PladStallions.com. I'm Brian, and with me, as always, next to me, very far away in another country, is Jason.
Hello, everyone.
And with this being October, the month, one of my favorite months of the year, and Halloween, we decided to choose two topics again to explore this month as opposed to one, so you're getting a double shot of us. And this month's topic is something very near and dear to my heart. I think it is to you, Jason, and that is the whole phenomenon that is Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Yes, indeed. I think it's – I'm kind of surprised we haven't gotten to this yet.
And I'm sure we've discussed it.
I'm sure, but as a topic, because it's one of those things that we'll talk about all the influences and where this thing has, you know, branched out. But for something that had such a brief – lifetime, you know, and people, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've talked about that I get really excited about or turned on by tends to be stuff that, you know, is kind of finite. Maybe if it's a toy line that's, you know, there's only like 10 pieces that you could find, or, you know, a series that only lasted a certain amount, or a band that only had two albums or whatever.
Well, being a fan of sci-fi and horror TV, you're used to stuff lasting a season.
Well, you are, but not that. Not that has resonated for 40 years like this.
No, this one really is one of those things that, like, first of all, to establish the history of it, I don't know if you knew this, but it was originally a book.
Okay, you're going to have to, you probably know more about this than I do.
And I actually have read the book, too.
So I know that it was a book, but it, and the character was Kolchak in the book, correct?
What it is a fellow by the name of Jeff Rice was trying to get this book published. It was called The Kolchak Papers.
Okay.
He took it to a literary agent, and somebody said, you know, this would make a good movie. And they had Rice. They actually optioned it for a script. It wasn't published yet.
Okay.
And then they got Darren McGavern involved, and they got Richard Matheson involved.
Okay.
And of course, Richard Matheson is one of my favorite sci-fi and horror authors.
I mean, he's synonymous with The Incredible Shrinking Man and
I Am Legend.
Say again?
I Am Legend, The Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone and Beaches. I think he wrote the first draft of Beaches.
I believe he sang the theme song.
He was, at that point, he was still a jobbing, you know, television writer. I mean, you know, or freelance sort of writer, wasn't he, in the early 70s?
Well, I think he was a successful author, but yeah, he was a screenwriter.
Right.
And so it was actually the book didn't see publication until after the movie aired.
Mm-hmm.
The movie aired in, I believe, January 1972. It was produced by Dan Curtis, who, of course, is a producer of Dark Shadows.
And let's, just in case...
Certainly, man who knows vampires.
We always... I mean, I tend to assume that if you're into this show or if you're listening to what we're talking about, that you know a bit of this or have a bit of a reference, but just in case you don't, I mean, you're maybe going to get turned on to Kolchak for the first time or whatever. These were television movies.
Mm-hmm.
So these were not, I mean, you know, these didn't, we're not talking about, you know, movie theater films or theatrical films. This was a TV movie. And from what I understand, the reason that, so they did the first one, which was called The Night Stalker. From what I understood, because I don't know if it was a magazine or DVDs or what, but it was hugely successful.
It was a record-breaking television movie. It had so much success that I've actually heard that they released it theatrically in Europe. I've never seen the posters. I would buy that poster in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah,
because there's absolutely no Kolchak merchandise.
And Kolchak, you know, the character Carl Kolchak was played by Darren McGavern, who most people, I think, if you put the picture in front of them, they'd go, that's the dad from Christmas Story.
Yeah, Ralphie's old man.
Yeah.
But he has had a storied career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think, depending on your age, you would remember him as Mike Hammer, too, in the 50s.
Well, yeah, and Twilight Zone, right?
I mean, Twilight
Couple of Twilight Zones? Or was it Outer Limits, or was he not in Twilight Zone?
I don't know if he was on Twilight Zone. I
don't think he was. I'm thinking of your show of shows. No. You're right. He was in Twilight Zone. But he, you know, he'd show up in things like The Natural. He was great in that. In fact, he was uncredited, I think, in The Natural. He didn't want his name in the credits. He wanted it to be a surprise. But he's wonderful in that movie, the baseball movie with Redford, Barry Levinson. Just loads of stuff.
He has a career where he didn't show up a lot.
Yeah.
But he did show up, and he was just a – and this is one of the things – one of the themes I would like to say about The Night Stalker. I think it is the show it is because of him.
I think so too. I think he – but see, don't you think that he he's right in the pocket of that very serviceable television actor – that worked a lot, that was reliable, that was wonderful at what he did. But he also was – he wasn't method. He came – like he wasn't – you know, he was still in that like you put Darren McGavin next to Peter Falk and they're two completely different actors.
That's a really good – and I want to go there, so I'm glad you brought up Peter Falk. But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Like he was still kind of – no, but come on, no, but well, of course not. No, I wouldn't do that. I mean, it was a bit of the character, but it was also still that kind of acting style. It was a little bit broader. It was a little bit more, but he also, I mean, I remember this show as a kid. I remember seeing this on television as a kid because the two TV movies happened, I think, a year apart now that I, you know, I didn't know that as a kid. But then the bulk of the series, which was how many episodes? Like 20?
20?
16.
I'd be surprised 15. If it was 20.
When it got the full order, I mean, I remember watching the show.
They did do 20 episodes. Wow.
It might have been in reruns. It might have been like after the first season aired, and then they would always rerun the season.
Well,
so
the show ran in 75. So you probably, you know.
I mean, if it ran in 75 and like got repeated or what? I mean, it's one of my earliest TV memories is this show scaring the crap out of me.
Well, this is the thing about that show, and. As you know, I was a monster kid from the day I figured out what a monster was.
Right.
And when I would read, I don't think I read Famous Monsters as a kid, but I read those Jeff Rovin books and different publications about monsters in the library. They all would mention the Night Stalker and how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, I think it was 80 or 81, Buffalo 29 played the movie. They used to play a movie at 8 o'clock every night. And I really wanted to watch it, and my, you know, we had one TV, and you kind of had to wrestle for it. And I remember my dad sitting down, what do you want to watch? And we turned it on, and he's like, oh, Kolchak. And it was like, oh, my dad knows what this is.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
And so that's how big a deal it was. And he knew what it was, and then about, I think the next day they played The Night Strangler, which is the sequel. And then... about 2 years later, the Rochester Channel, which I was joking with you off recording about, played it around 1 a.m. And, you know, I also had to watch the great commercials for the Record Archive and J&E Groceries and all that stuff I was talking about. But then I think we had a VCR by this point, so I was taping those at like 1 or 2 a.m. And I really grew to understand why those that like it liked it a lot. Because again, I think McGavin really embodied this character, it was about this character, his acting style just nailed it.
He totally did. It was, and let me just jump in real quick again, for those of you that may be coming to this kind of fresh, the gist of Kolchak, the Night Stalker, was he was a reporter for a Chicago paper. He had a grumpy boss, as most do in television, like cops and reporters and everything else. But they had a mutual friendship, understanding kind of thing. A few other characters would float around. They were recurring, but he was the one that really went out and did stuff. And the gist of it was, if anyone out there has never seen or doesn't know it and digs the X-Files – we'll get to this eventually, but it's the precursor, because here was this guy that you know, was aware of zombies and werewolves and vampires and you name it. And he tried to track these stories down. And invariably, by the end, he had no evidence. He had no proof. No one believed him. He couldn't print the story, et cetera. And so he just kept writing articles he didn't really care about because he wanted to go after these stories.
The first movie is actually a story unto itself, which is there's a vampire in Las Vegas.
Right.
No one believes him. And at the very end, he gets the vampire, and he's staking him as the cops burst in.
Yeah.
He's drummed out of town. They burn all the bodies because the cops know what's going on.
That's right.
He's ruined. And the very end of – and, you know, he had a girlfriend in this, and it's all over. And the very end of the first movie, he is sitting in a crappy motel listening to his tape, recalling it, and you're like – wow, you know, like it's a real downer 70s ending.
Yeah.
The second movie.
Salem's Lot. I remember the ending of Salem's Lot. You're just like, oh my God. Really?
The second movie has him show up in Seattle. And his former boss, played by the brilliant Simon Oakland, Vincenzo, hears him in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says to somebody, is the guy over there wearing a crappy suit?
It's kind of a straw hat.
Yeah, yeah. He hires him to do the same job for this other paper. And, of course, the paper's run by John Carradine, who's a real stickler. And, of course, weird murders happened again. And, you know, it turns out to be the killer turns out, spoilers, the killer turns out to be Richard Anderson, who is the Oscar Goldman. Which is weird because... in the original pilot for The $6 Million Man, Darren McGavern is the original Oscar Goldman. He's not the same character name.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, he's not the same character name. The character of Oscar Goldman hasn't been invented, but he's the guy who makes Steve Austin bionic, and he's written out of the series after the pilot.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just thought of that. That's why I got all up.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, yeah. But that's the other thing too. Is he's kind of it's weird because. It is kind of a heightened thing. It reminds me of the fact that he is always wearing the same like seersucker suit.
Yet he drives an awesome car.
Shirt and tie, drives an awesome car, but he's always in the same. It reminds me of the Wes Anderson thing where, you know, the characters are wearing the same uniform basically throughout the film, like the, you know, Tenenbaums or whatever. Nobody ever questions like, why don't you see Kolchak in a tux or whatever? He's always wearing that suit in every episode.
Well,
but
I think it's sort of synonymous with the character and that's who he's supposed to be.
It's interesting because anyone in wardrobe would have gone like, well, let's give him a vibe and let's make him rumpled and let's make him kind of square. And he's wearing this straw hat that nobody really wears anymore in the mid 70s. But to give him the same exact suit in every single episode, that to me is like branding. That to me is like someone was thinking about this to put this image of this guy and this character synonymous with the name of the show, you know, because it became Kolchak, the Night Stalker. It's like, let's keep him in the same. It's like a superhero unit. I mean, even James Bond doesn't wear the same. He's not a superhero. He doesn't wear the same outfit every day. Clark Kent doesn't as a reporter or whatever. I always thought that was really interesting. And I wondered what the methodology was of that. Speaking about the show though, the history and everything, beyond all the character actors that showed up and all the names of, and there were, I can't even think of the writers besides Matheson off the top of my head, except for Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis, who I think one of their first things that they ever wrote was something to do with Night Stalker, one of the episodes maybe, or they were something to do with it. But David Chase, who ended up on Rockford Files and then created The Sopranos and all that stuff, I think he was either story editor or consultant or script doctor or peppered things, and he brought a lot of humor into the show.
Well, that's the one thing that was really synonymous with the show is how funny it is.
It is very funny. And when it's scary, I think, yes, it's dated in places and it's a little ridiculous with the makeup here and there. But you know, it. Now, here's the thing. I mean, I did think it scared. I mean, I look at it now and some of them I find pretty chilling and some are a little more dated. But do you think it was originally sort of made with a younger audience in mind? I know it was a nighttime series, but do you think it was – trying to appeal to that early 70s, mid 70s monster craze that kind of kicked off.
Yeah, I do think that, well, you know, I mean, I think that they didn't expect it to be as huge as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, hey, we're on to something here. Let's keep going. And I think it really was huge with that crowd.
And then how did the show itself, because it only lasted a season, so it couldn't have done that well.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I want to talk about is it went to series. And uh-huh. The series, you know, like the first two movies show Carl being bounced around.
Right.
And then the series, it went to series, and I think that what happened was it kind of became a fatigue issue. Because, you know, the concept in itself was now that Carl was a writer for the Associated Press, like a syndicated service, and he lived in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Again, Vincenzo was his boss. They smartly cast Simon Oakland for the series. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple of he had a foil in the office. I think his name was Ron Updike, who Carl called Uptight. And
Can we just talk about his buddy Ron Updike at the office for a moment?
Yeah, sure.
Am I wrong in thinking that perhaps the creators were trying to tell us something about Ron that maybe, you know...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, he was from San Francisco. They gave him the name Updike. He was always getting picked on. He was like, you know, always, you know, squirting Primatene mist up his nose because he had this and this. He always getting colds, and Oakland chews him out. You know, like, well, you're sick again. You know, I mean,
I think what they were trying to do rather than that was they were coming up with the bizarro Carl Kolchak. Right, like Carl's a slob, and he's unethical, and he bends the rules, and he's a character. So right. You come up with this character who's neat, and you know follows the rules, and is tidy looking in his appearance. And so I think that's more or less what that character was supposed to be, was this kind of, you know, you're a direct, you're Ned Flanders to your Homer Simpson, you're Felix to your Oscar.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah. I think, am I Felix to your Oscar, by the way?
I like to call this show a couple of Oscars.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like it. So it did okay, but it didn't sustain. But what I was, like I was saying, I think it's fascinating that the brief run that it had, it is so beloved by, you know, monster, sci-fi, whatever, because it was this mishmash. Let's just run down some of...
Yeah, what I should tell you, too, is that the show was a Friday night at 10, which is not a great time.
Oh, yeah.
And they moved it to Friday nights at 8. But it just never... And McGavin was unhappy, too, because it was turning into Monster of the Week. And one of the things I will say that I don't like about the show is... How many friggin' monsters are there in Chicago? You know,
Have you been to Chicago?
Yes, many times, and I love Portillo's and
there's a lot of monsters though.
There's monsters huge... bear fan. They're monster bear fans, and they have monster traffic. But
huge, huge monster community in the Midwest that people don't know about. Mm. Yeah, lots
always
of Sasquatch.
Getting killed by zombies.
Lots of Sasquatch in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I was overrun by spider babies. So there's a lot of that going on in the Midwest.
Toronto has undead Elvises, mostly.
See? So, you know, it's the underbelly you don't think about in Chicago. But yes, you're right. Why Chicago? But then why did those damn Scooby kids have to run into so many monsters?
You know, to get to the point of this, what I would really have liked the series to have done, and of course, you know, I don't have a magic eraser or a time machine, is I wish it was more like Columbo, where they just kept doing a 2-hour movie once a month. You know, that would be more plausible. It would be more like event television. You know,
You could really feel it out. You could let it breathe more. You could let it sort of build. But I got to tell you, speaking of Columbo, which, you know, I think we both love, and we love Peter.
I adore Columbo.
You know, and it was, but man, we went back and watched a couple Netflix instant, I want to say mid-70s, and my God, one of them, it was about a museum or something. The crime didn't even commit till close to 30 minutes into the episode.
Wow.
Before we even saw Columbo asking questions. You know, it's like, wow, let's go. Like, I don't want it to like zip by because I know it's from the era that it's from, but it really took its time.
You know what? I didn't mind that because like my Columbo era in the mid 90s was a height of my unemployment.
Nice.
And did Columbo help click the day away?
Do you know where what I understood the character to have come from?
Yeah, I know all about the origins of Columbo.
Oh, you did? Okay, so is it Diabolique? The French film Diabolique.
This is the first time I can say this that we did this.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we did in the Watching the Detectives episode.
We did an episode about detectives?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
I got to start listening to the show.
Yeah, you should.
Shit, what else have we done? You know what we should
do?
We should do one on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one.
Or toys.
No.
Or like Mego.
Nobody would be interested in that.
Why haven't we done a Doctor Who one yet?
I think we started with that.
We talked about the Diabolique thing in the episode. Did I say it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Christ. This is bad. That's bad. This is the first sign. This is the first sign that either I'm losing my mind or there's way too much up in my mind that is getting regurgitated. I don't want to be that guy.
You know so what? I actually
maybe this should be a safe word. Maybe we should have a safe word in the show.
Yeah.
Maybe if you start to go down a road and go, you know. So you know the thing I love about Columbo is the height of mine, and I'll go swordfish.
Yeah, yeah. Or you could do a bird call.
Or
yeah.
And that'll get you to go, oh, whoops, never mind. Never mind, went down this road. Sorry.
Moving you know up. What, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I actually, a couple of weeks ago, I was working on the blog, and I posted a fashion photo, made a joke,
right.
Almost pressed publish and went, this is weird. And I started to dig. 6 months earlier, I had made the exact same photo, the exact same joke, and I was
yeah, but that's,
wow, I'm tired.
Come on, man, you're posting something every day.
I know, but it was like
that's
kind of it. Kind of made me like it gave me what I would call pause, where it's like
sure,
what am I doing here? You know.
By the way, side note: if you don't track down one of those Hal Needham stunt spectacular playset things for me someday, we're not going to
go on YouTube because somebody gave me the link. It's Dick Van Dyke playing with it because I guess he was the spokesperson for Gabriel Toys.
Yes, he was. But I need to get a hold of that thing.
It's a pretty neat
it's toy. It's so random, and it could only have been the 70s, and it could only have been that company or whatever. It's just one of those perfect things. But anyway, speaking of which, did the show – and I know it was a very brief run, but did it get – any kind of merchandising, like were there tie-in, you know?
Here's what I know. There's
books or anything like that.
Nothing. But I will tell you what I know.
Okay.
Two paperback novels. I own both. Obviously, they were published after.
Okay.
And in the paperback novel, it is revealed that Carl is of Transylvanian descent, and his real name is Carol, and his grandfather used.
Carol,
like
Carol O'Connor.
Yeah, like it's a you know an Eastern European name, right?
Oh,
And his grandfather used to fill his head with stories of vampires.
Oh, okay.
So that's a little bit of his backstory you don't get in the show. I guess it was just deemed unimportant.
And you would know this. I think we ever. And stop me if you've heard this one before. Did we talk about Doc Savage and that whole the film that George Powell did? Have we talked about that ever?
We probably have dabbled in it. I don't think we ever did a Doc Savage show, but
wasn't that the thing, or wasn't that a thing that was about to get something from Mego at the time? Like,
yes, it absolutely was.
So would Kolchak have been something that?
No, I never heard anything about Kolchak getting that kind of merchandising. I would imagine the most interested people in Kolchak, if the show had continued, would have been Aurora.
Okay.
But the only thing I do know about licensing Kolchak is, first of all, I know it's difficult because I've tried, but there was one comment. In 1974, Marvel Comics got sold. You know, Martin Goodman sold it off.
Okay.
And the first thing they did was fire Goodman's son, Chip.
Okay.
So Goodman, angered and rich, decided to start his own comic book company called Atlas Seaboard. I love Atlas Seaboard comics. They came out in the early 70s. He hired anybody from DC or Marvel. He offered more money. He offered better, you know, page rates. But one of the weird things he did was he took Larry Lieber, who was Stan Lee's brother and used to working in comics, and he took Jeff Roven, who is very well known for horror magazines, and he put Lieber in charge of the magazines and Jeff Roven in charge of the comic books, which makes no sense. Roven's Roven's initial comments to him were, "We need to license the following two programs. We need to license Kolchak the Night Stalker for a comic series, and we need to license the Omega Man for a comic series," which would have made my head explode. Martin Goodman refused and said, "Just knock them off." So Atlas created a comic called Planet of the Vampires, which is really like Planet of the Apes meets I Am Legend. And they created a comic, and I cannot remember the name of the character, but he's like a Hollywood stunt man who fights vampires.
So okay.
That's now the Kolchak did. I think there was an issue of Dracula Lives Marvel did where they had a character called the Night Staker, who was essentially Kolchak. But no, there's little to no merchandising. In the 90s, some comics appeared, but you know. My friend Sean in the 90s sculpted a model kit of Kolchak for Dimensional Designs. But there has, you know, there's never been any toys. There's never been anything but some comics and some books. And, of course, DVDs. And the show got released on VHS, I think, in the early 90s. Two, couple of episodes in a compendium.
Okay. And, wait a second. Why is it quite so? I mean, is it, who's got the, doesn't, isn't there like a comic company now that's doing stuff?
I think Moonstone was doing it, for a while. I bought a few of them. They were really nicely done.
Let's go back a bit. So the show gets the two TV movies, then it becomes an hour long weekly series, gets canceled after 20 episodes, et cetera. But
and I'll tell you why it got canceled too.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It was a night film show. So it was really costly.
Why?
And the star was tired.
Okay, was it nothing to do with the ratings?
Well, I think it's all. I think it was bringing in an audience, but it's one of those things where you could put a crappy sitcom there and get the same audience. You know what I mean? Like, it's not all just the ratings. It was. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that that it was a really costly thing to produce. Like, same with Battlestar Galactica. You look at Galactica's ratings; they're high.
They're Galactica. Didn't we talk about this? Got like 6 some million people.
The show cost a bundle.
It cost like $1 million an episode.
Yeah.
Incredibly expensive show. So that sort of makes sense. Maybe he was getting tired or whatever. So then it must have gone into they say syndication. I always thought you had
to have they took the TV movies. Those went into syndication. They also, and I'd love to see these, they also took the first couple of episodes and made it into like TV movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know how they did that with Planet of the Apes? Excuse me.
I didn't know that. I don't think I ever saw.
Sorry.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
No. Take a swig.
Yeah, they did that with Planet of the Apes. They did that with Space 1999, UFO. They would make these mishmash TV movies and, you know, cram them together you know, market them that way. And I think they did that, and I have never seen the Kolchak TV movies like that.
Neither have I. I mean, at least here, in the U.S., sorry, where I am, in America, you can get the entire collection on DVD, I believe. Is it available everywhere? I mean, like, is it worldwide or is it like?
Well, it was on Netflix for a long time, and you know, the thing is too is the thing that kept the show alive is CBS used to play it at like midnight nationally with Columbo episodes on Friday nights for years in the 80s, and in the 90s, the Sci-Fi Channel ran the hell out of it. And then, you know, as years went on, the Scream Network did it. So it's had a long storied life for a 20-episode series.
For a very short-lived series, but even more importantly, you know, we're talking 75 or so, 20 years later, you know, 94, 95, whatever it was, Chris Carter creates something called The X-Files, which, again, was a slow burn.
I think that came out around 93 or 94.
I thought it was 94.
No, I remember watching it in a dorm room. So
maybe it was 93. Maybe it was 93. But it was a slow burn because it did okay, but then there was someone at the network that said, no, we gotta make sure this keeps going because it didn't do
all the buzz at college.
It started to build slowly, but everyone that talked to Carter, you know, assumed that it was, the paranoia conspiracy stuff and maybe some Twilight Zone influences and things like that. But he kept saying, no, really, the biggest influence is Kolchak, the Night Stalker. That's really – and then people started to talk about Kolchak again in the 90s, I thought. Like it was like, oh, yeah, of course. And then eventually Darren McGavin showed up on The X-Files.
Yeah, now, did you know this, that the original notion Chris Carter had – because he was always big about it being Kolchak.
He wanted it to be Kolchak.
He wanted it to be Kolchak. And McGavin said no.
Gavin said no, yeah, and so he created a character who was called Chancho LaRue, I think.
Chachi, I thought his name was Chachi.
Chachi LaRue.
Yeah.
No, I forgot what he does.
I do too.
No, I know. It was Arthur Dales or Daly or Dales or Dale.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I've never watched. I've never watched the X-Files.
Okay, well, that'll be our next
show. I've seen every episode twice, so...
That'll be our next show.
Well, that'll be you and her.
Yeah, or you can just catch up from now till then and watch every episode. But so he shows up in The X-Files as, I think it's Arthur Dale, and he's not Kolchak, but what Carter did was make him, you know, quote, the father of The X-Files.
Mm-hmm. Like Carter also threw in Roy Thinnes
in a bunch of
episodes, so it was kind of like a homage to the Invaders. I loved that.
Yeah, and he threw in Charles Nelson Reilly, which was an homage to Match Game.
I thought it was Uncle Croc's block.
I said sailor. My head's a sailor.
He never gets boring.
So then everyone's talking about Kolchak again, and then there was a remake. There was another series in 2005.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this right now. I never watched a minute of it.
I did.
Oh, did you? As soon as I read Stuart Townsend, I went, wrong. This is wrong. Because that guy has zero screen presence.
But see, it's not only that.
Sorry if you're a listener, Stuart.
No, but yeah, we got to be careful because we've just had a revelation about someone that's listening to us. So we forget this goes far and wide. Mm. No, but here's the thing. For geeks like us that are uptight about sex, like I can say I love Roger Moore. I think he's terrific. I love him as Bond, but he's not Bond. You know, Brosnan is okay, but he kind of looks like Roger Moore's, you know, nephew. Craig, Dalton, Connery, the things and Lazenby, which we'll talk about someday. We did a 007 episode, but anyway.
Yeah, we did.
The thing that's great about those guys is they're handsome in a not jump at you kind of way, and they can handle themselves. You know that you don't want to go up against this guy because he's going to break your neck. And we talked about this just recently about the character of the Doctor on Doctor Who, where, you know, I don't have a problem with Davison or Tennant or whatever, but Matt Smith had a wonderful face. You know, Eccleston's got a great face. You know, Capaldi, you know, that's how he should look to me. He shouldn't be the prettiest guy in the room. He should have a handsomeness that the personality is attractive, whatever. The minute you throw out a name like Stuart Townsend, no offense to whatever else he's done, you think about the character of Kolchak, he's not supposed to be that guy.
No, he's not a handsome pretty boy.
He's not a handsome pretty boy. He's not the guy that gets through the front door. He's not the guy that sits up at the front of the press room.
He's the guy putting his foot in the door.
Exactly.
He's the guy that gets pushed around.
Exactly.
It would be like, you know, okay, we're going to do Columbo, but we're going to get I can't figure out a handsome actor's name right now.
Jesse Eisenberg.
God, stop with the Jesse.
listening. That was
You know what?
We're doing a Jesse Eisenberg marathon at the house tonight.
Are you?
That chameleon. Oh. Yeah.
I like when he plays that one dude.
Yeah, someone should do a YouTube mix of scenes from different movies and see if anyone thinks it's the same film or like 15 different films.
It would be like getting Channing Tatum to play Columbo. That's the worst.
All right. So here we go. Very, very good.
Long time to get there, and I'm sorry.
No, but I know exactly what you mean. So yeah. Very good. And so the million-dollar question of the episode is, if you could greenlight Kolchak as a series tomorrow – who would be at the top of your list to play the part?
You know, that's been really difficult, and I know I created this question.
Yeah, yeah.
If I chose an American actor,
yeah,
the only – because I'm also thinking, how do you get this green lit, right? And a lot of people are saying Johnny Depp and blah, blah, blah. The only American name actor I can think of that could pull it off is Bryan Cranston.
Really?
That's my thought, because
I like that.
He has an amazing range. He can do comedy.
He's a
middle-aged guy.
I like that. Yeah.
And
he is a handsome fella.
So was Darren McGavin.
No, Darren McGavin was, but he was of course he was.
Yeah.
And different, but he wasn't he wasn't Shatner. Come on.
No, but many men are going to be that big?
But who is?
Yeah, well, Shatner was Canadian too. So
Cranston's good. That's good.
Yeah, like I kept thinking, what British actor could pull this off? You know, but Cranston to me, he's a really good actor. I mean, he makes you love and hate Walter White in the same, you know. So I think he could pull it off. And of course, the Malcolm in the Middle thing was always really good to show his comedy chops.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
What's yours?
Sam Rockwell.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell.
Wow, I'm jealous. That's really good.
Sam Rockwell, because that guy, I've loved that guy for so long. And while he can sometimes lapse into the Sam Rockwellisms, which is what I kind of dig about him, then he'll pull out something like Moon that just knocked my socks off.
Well, damn it.
And then he can turn right around and just do, you know, just flat out silly comedy, but he's got a presence and he's got a weirdness to him that even in Iron Man 2, even in what is the one of the weakest Marvel films, even his character in Iron Man 2, you can tell he's doing so much more with it. There's a bit in Iron Man 2 that is so obvious when he's talking to Mickey Rourke, who he busts out of jail, spoilers. He clearly is this guy that gets spray tanned. He clearly is a guy that goes and gets airbrushed and spray tanned. And so he's using his hands a lot in the scene. And you can see the splotches of like orange spray and paint on his hands where he's gotten this bad, you know, spray tan from, kind of thing. And, you know, Rockwell to me is one of those character guys that became a leading man, you know, sort of, and isn't afraid to look rumpled. And also, see, the only other person I would have said that kind of pops into mind, and this, I'll say the name and then I'll tell you why it doesn't work.
Okay.
Is Oliver Platt. And I'll tell you why it doesn't work though. The weight, and I really like Oliver Platt, but the rumpledness, whatever, but he's too big, he's too imposing. Kolchak should be, I think he should be, like you said, he's not the front of the press room, he's gonna have to stick his foot in the door, whatever. And Rockwell's the guy that kind of blends in.
Yeah.
He's not the guy that stands and goes, oh, look, it's Flash Thompson. He's going to be asking questions. Go ahead, Flash.
Yeah.
Kolchak's at the back going, got one more question. What happened to the thing with the thing? You know, and I think Rockwell would be really good.
No. You know, having seen, I'll never forget, I couldn't live this down because I just one day got in the car and drove downtown to watch a movie. And it was Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife, when I got home, my wife said, you mean to tell me you drove all the way downtown to see a movie with Drew Barrymore, George Clooney, and Julia Roberts, three people you don't like?
Right.
And
right.
I was like, yeah, right? And it was mostly, A, because I'm fascinated by how batshit crazy Chuck Barris is.
Right.
Sam Rockwell was amazing in that.
He was great.
Yeah.
I think I've loved him. I mean, you know, people have a lot of criticism for the Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy film. I think it's just fine. It's never going to be the books or the radio show or the British.
I don't levy any of any of the criticism on him.
No, I think he's still wonderful in it. The problem is we know it so well. If I know people that love that movie, that I mean a couple of friends that never knew what it was and really have a love for it because they have nothing to compare it to. They weren't those people that went into it knowing everything. I mean, I'm sitting there going, I know every single syllable in this thing. And how can I not think of the original Zaphod when I'm watching what he's doing?
Yeah.
So that was the problem. But when I saw him in Moon, I mean, that's when I just was, oh, man, somebody's given this guy something else to do. And he's always been good.
You didn't see his range in Charlie's Angels?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's another one he did. There's oh, what's it called? Oh, my gosh. You got to find this movie. Again, it was produced by Clooney. But it's a remake of an Italian film, which is called Big Deal on Madonna Street. And it's him and William Macy and George Clooney and
is it Matchstick Men?
Claude Akins. No, he's great in that too. He's really good in that. No, it's called something City or something Town or something.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's a remake of these petty crooks that are trying to do the safe heist. And he's just got great timing. He's just even in, you know, I think he steals the entire Galaxy Quest. I think he's the funniest thing in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, he's really great in that.
He's perfect. And I'll bet you nowhere in the script that it'd say he's got a mustache. He thought to grow that mustache, and you knew exactly who this guy was.
Yeah.
I think he's only gonna get better. And that would be my guy. I just think he'd be.
No, you win.
There are no wrong answers, but you may be correct. I don't.
No, know. I really dig that.
Amazing. But we would be remiss if we didn't talk about. There have been custom figures made of Darren McGavin.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Stick of Dummies has done a 12-inch and an 8-inch version of Karl Kolchak. Both, I think, have completely sold out now. You know, I don't think. Like, I have actually honestly tried to get that license to produce a Mego-style figure. Nothing screams 1974 more like a Mego-style figure. It is really difficult to find somebody, and I don't know if there is issues with the license. I know that Jeff Rice sued the show while it was in production.
Okay.
And that may be an inhibitor. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But it is one of those things that does not have it's not as easy to find any merchandise from that show. I mean, there's no T-shirts. There's nothing. And it is beloved. I mean, I can remember going to Chiller Theater Cons, and there would be a dude walking around whistling that theme song the entire time. Like,
oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. Wait, yeah. Which theme? The theme of the show?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so glad you brought this up because I would have forgotten this.
Mm-hmm.
You are an aficionado of 70s television. You are also an aficionado of theme music and songs, etc.
Yep.
What is your take on the theme to Kolchak the Night Stalker?
It is really different.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very good theme song.
It's
distinct. It starts off with the whistling, and then it goes into that, you know, the thematic version. And I think the starting of the show is a little cheesy.
Yes.
But as a show goes, I kind of think it's one of the more memorable, I guess.
See, I think that. I hate the whistling.
Do you?
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I think it suddenly feels like we're going into da da da, like it's going to be some 70s romance or like, you know.
It always kind of reminds me of the music that Charlton Heston's playing at the start of the Omega Man when he puts it on in his 8-track. It's this like easy breezy listening music.
Like it's going to – suddenly we're going to have, it's the start of Mrs. Columbo or whatever, you know, something like that. And then, but then when he gets to the type, it's like, dun, 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 and then you go, oh, that's a 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's getting spooky. I get it. I get it. Because I'd imagine the intention was in a seemingly sort of normal environment and everything is rosy and the kids are out playing and, you know, whatever, and everything's fine, there is an underbelly of evil that's going around this city.
Yeah.
And it starts out kind of blissful, and then it's like, no, it's really actually spooky, and then it goes spooky. But for my money, I would have lost the whistling and just gone right to spooky. Have him just walk and then do something tingly or spooky, and then dunga, dunga, dunga.
Let's go into just the series for a second. I hear what you're saying. I disagree. I love that theme. Well, maybe it's because it's different, you know?
You're going to be wrong. And by the way, can I also throw out, speaking of Kolchak and speaking of toys, throw out a shout-out to Chris Height, who is a famous listener and big fan of Monsters, Pod Stallions, Plaid Stallions, cool stuff in general.
Yeah.
And he, years ago, sent me the 12-inch Kolchak figure.
Distinctive Dummies?
Is it Distinctive Dummies? Is that who did it? Well, I've got the 12-inch figure with the straw hat and the flashlight and tape recorder and all that stuff.
Very nice.
Yeah, so thank you again, Chris. It's in a place of pride in one of my cases in the office. So yeah, just wanted to throw that out there.
I have the 8-inch Janos Gorzny. But by the way, this is an homage no one remembers. Do you remember the 1980s Fox TV series Werewolf?
The 1980s Fox?
Yeah, remember when the Fox Network first premiered? They had it's a remake of The Incredible Hulk, more or less, where a guy gets turned into a werewolf, and he's trying to find the head werewolf to kill him.
The amulet?
No, you know, the head werewolf, the one-armed head werewolf.
The head werewolf.
Yeah. And the head werewolf was played by Chuck Connors.
As it would be.
And his name was Janos Gorzny, which was a direct homage to the Night Stalker.
Is this the point where I tell my story about how Peter Wingard got brought into Marvel Comics lore that I've told like probably four times on the show without even knowing it?
You've done that before, yeah. You've done the Jason King thing before.
Swordfish.
Yeah, swordfish. Yeah.
I thought we had a safe word, Hyler.
I forgot it.
God, just leave me hanging.
Tippy-toe.
Lemon tree.
But, you know, I was sick this week. This is why I sound this way. So I was watching old Kolchaks, and you know, they go through all the tropes. Like, you got to wonder how the second season would even go anywhere. It was becoming Monster of the Week. You know, the first episode is the Ripper, Jack the Ripper reincarnated, which is a pretty solid piece, and it's also very funny because there's a scene in the episode where Carl is hiding in the Ripper's closet. And, you know, the guy's, it's doing the pantomime of putting his clothes away. And Carl just pulls a full-on Shemp. You know, the character just goes, and runs out of the closet.
Well, it did get kind of, what was the one, wait a minute. So, wait, is that the,
that was the pilot.
But who was the guy, remember the werewolf episode?
The werewolf on the cruise ship is actually a good one because,
But who's the guy that played Hermie in Get Smart?
It was Dick Gautier.
Jaime. Who? What was it?
Dick Gautier.
Dick Gautier.
Gautier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the swinging single that shares a room with Kolchak.
Oh, is he? He also played Batman in that Equal Rights for Equal Pay commercial with you.
None more 70s than Dick Gautier.
No, I like that guy.
He's like the Marjo Gortner of 70s unbuttoned shirtdom.
He got around. So we had that. I think the next – there was a zombie episode which had Antonio Fargas in it.
Because I remember this one because I went, from The Shining. It's Scatman Crothers is in it too.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And Phil Silvers is in an episode about a creature that can take on the likeness of anyone, like an ancient. It's a strange episode. And in fact, the monster takes on the appearance of Emily from Carl Kolchak's office, and Carl actually shoots an arrow into Emily.
Did Joe Flynn ever make it into the show?
Regretfully, no.
Let me tell you something. And Joe Flynn, Oh, okay. Right. Well, I'm afraid, CJ, we're going to have to make the monkey the vice principal. Okay, make the monkey the vice principal. Well, the monkey the vice principal. Yeah. What? Huh? There's a
huge talk about Joe Flynn fan.
Talk about camp and like over the edge. You know, people forget a lot of the Night Gallery. If there were shorts within the in the episode of the Night Gallery,
yeah,
so there's like,
yeah, they're pretty cheap.
There were some goofy, and there's a goofy one. I mean, uber goofy, where a vampire comes to a I was going to say a massage parlor. That's not right. Not a massage parlor, a funeral parlor.
That was a Cinemax movie you saw.
So this vampire and a Nazi walk into a funeral parlor. No. So this vampire walks in to the funeral thing to arrange a funeral. Joe Flynn is the guy behind the desk, and you can just imagine the setup. Eventually, like, who's – all right, and that's the name of the – who's going to be? And, well, I'm so sorry. And then you realize the guy's saying, I'm throwing my own funeral, and he's a vampire or whatever. And here's my guest list. And, of course, Joe Flynn's like, what do you mean you want to tie your people? The vampire is Werner Klemperer from Hogan's Heroes.
Oh, dear God.
And the guy, you know, at the parlor is Joe Flynn. And then eventually when the guests start turning up, they are like central casting. There's a green witch with a big pointy hat. There's a werewolf guy. There's, you know, whatever. And they're all kind of hanging out in the pews acting monstery. It is the weirdest, maddest 70s stupid thing ever.
Amicus movies got that way, too.
They did. They did.
They just were like, ah, let's just go full on camp. I was just watching the Monster Club the other day, and it's like, oh boy, like,
is that the one that like? Are UB40 in that? Who's that?
Yeah, UB40's in it. Yeah.
God, think of the stuff again that I should know up in my brain that I know.
Yeah, you got that. Yeah, I can't get that Monsters Rule Okay theme song out of my head. Like, it has been there since 1981.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's sad. And the movie's not even good.
You know what's sad that you just say that, which just you know the memory that leads me to?
What's that?
And I bet I've seen this once in 30 however many years, the Mego commercial for the Incredible Hulk 12-inch kind of 12, you know, Incredible Hulk, the Incredible Hulk with the face
that's mean. Yeah. I have that on 16mm.
It was in my head from that era. To like a year ago when I found it again on YouTube or whenever it was, or you sent me something or whatever it was a couple years ago. And I went, oh my God, I know. And I could have sung the entire thing from back then. Isn't that odd? Don't you think that's just weird that we retain stuff like that?
You know what?
It's not like it ran for years.
I dug up the incredible Dr. Steel commercial a few years ago on 16mm. And I paid a fortune to have it transferred because it's been in my head since 75. And I really needed to see it again.
Then there's another one that I can think of, and we might have talked about this because you gotta start making it. Giving me some. We gotta get a Wikipedia page or something because I'm gonna forget the stuff we've talked about. But there was an animated show about a witch that Gilda Radner did the voice for.
Yeah, we did this.
Yeah, well, the song, like, I know that I remember the theme of that, and I found it again on YouTube. I'm like, this aired one time in the U.S., and I know how the theme of the thing goes. I probably need to be on some
Witch's
kind of
Witch's Night Out.
Witch's Night Out.
Yeah.
It aired once.
You know what? My wife and I had to rent The Lion and the Witch and the Wardrobe when we were first dating.
That
because she had a nightmare in like 79 or 78 of one of the guys pushing her off a cliff. Oh, and she's like, I really need to see that again just to – like it was like kind of clemency, I guess, or cathartic, you know.
It's facing
the fear. And
yeah,
like
cleansing.
When she first said, oh, I had a nightmare about that guy, I thought it was recent.
Yeah.
She's like, when I was 8. You know?
I've only slowly started to buy, you know, Han Solo and carbonite figures, and
did that hurt?
Got a dog toy for the dogs.
I'm trying to.
It's been a long time, I know, but I'm still trying to come to terms with what that did to me. How horrible! Oh, I'm not kidding.
Show me the Han and carbonite where it hurt you.
I was sick to my stomach. It wasn't just the carbonite; it was the torture before the carbonite.
Yeah,
I'd never seen that happen to a hero before. That was awful. But that's a whole other show. We can just talk about my psyche.
It's a show we did.
We did, but we didn't explore my psyche for like 90 minutes about why that scarred me so much.
That's called therapy.
Is this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We should do an episode on therapy, unless we haven't.
We
have already. So there you go. So We've covered the merchandise, what little there was, the spinoff, the remake,
We've given the remake as much air as I'd like to. I'm sure there.
You
know, fans.
You can buy it. I think I've seen. You can get it.
I mean, what? I just couldn't. It was so wrong-headed.
Well, you know what they did, which you might even know this. In the first episode, they digitally inserted shots of Darren McGavin.
That from doesn't the make it show. Good. You know, no, they also no, no, they no. also remade The Prisoner, and they had an old guy dressed as number six.
I know. It doesn't make it good. I'm just saying that.
Did you ever see that remake of The Prisoner?
I stuck with it for two, because it was a mini series or something, or a series.
It was mini series.
I think I stuck with it through was it three nights or four nights? Or
I
what
don't
was
envy
it?
Anyone remaking The Prisoner. And at one
No. They've tried to do it for years, but I just couldn't stick with it.
One point they had Christopher Eccleston. And I thought, okay, there's a guy that I could see pulling a McGoohan. McGoohan was a, like McGavern, a really hard-to-replicate human being.
Well, it's like, you know what? I know. Like the Avengers, the not the Marvel Avengers, but the Avengers series that I love so much with Steed and Peele. Mm-hmm. When they made that film, it is universally thought of as one of the worst genre kind of adaptations. I don't think it is an. There are much worse.
Oh yeah.
To pick, but the biggest problem and Uma was okay, but she wasn't grinning throughout. The way Emma was. Emma was sharp and this and that. There wasn't a smirk anywhere in that. And worst of all was Ralph Fiennes trying to emulate John Steed and what Patrick McNee did with that character. He wasn't po-faced in the show. He was having the time of his life, and even smiling when he was sword fighting. And when you miss the mark like that with a character, or you cast Stuart Townsend as – I don't know what they didn't learn from the fact that he got let go from Lord of the Rings as Aragorn. What did they see that Peter Jackson didn't?
You know what? Stuart Townsend is the best Lestat.
He is.
But that's like nobody's a good Lestat.
Yeah, of the two times Lestat's been played, he's the best Lestat.
It's like you won, but
he finally won.
It's not that he isn't. I have nothing against Jim Caviezel, but he's not Patrick McGoohan, and I feel the same way about Stuart Townsend. It's like that guy isn't anywhere on the same planet as Darren McGavern. They're not similar. They were trying to. I'm pretty sure what they were also trying to do was get heat from something else, whatever that was, like X-Files. It could have been X-Files for all I know, but it's not the same thing.
No, they definitely were trying to do like they thought. Well, this would be another X-Files.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, in that detective episode that we did,
yeah,
did we talk about who we would cast as Rockford?
No, but
I literally still don't have an answer for that.
Oh well, that I don't know either.
I don't.
Channing Tatum.
Because the problem is he's rumpled. He's not a sad character, but he doesn't always get paid. He's getting in trouble. He lives in a trailer, keeps his gun in a cookie jar, but he's still a handsome fellow. He does fine with the ladies.
Josh Brolin.
It's James frickin' Garner. What would you say?
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
Bit rugged.
Yeah.
Looks like couch.
I thought he should have been the next Batman, the next Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because you want to see that guy in a bat suit kicking people's faces in.
You know what? I think there's been a lot of talk of that, but I don't know where we're going with that.
I think he should. Well, it's too late now. It's Ben. Blah blah. It should have been him. But that's not bad for Rockford. Although I don't know if he has the charm that. I mean, who's this? Garner could be charming, sexy. He could punch your face out. And remember the time that he went into the bar. He knew a guy was following him, and he asked the bartender for a roll of quarters, and He put it in his right hand, and the guy followed him into the men's room. And as soon as the guy walked in, Garner punched him with the roll of quarters in his fists.
Yeah,
and then the paper burst, and then Garner just dropped the quarters and ran it because the guy was bigger than Garner.
Yeah,
always using his brain. I don't know who that would be. I don't know how you put that in a bottle and go, that's the guy that should play Rockford. And they tried it. They did a pilot 4 or 5 years ago, and it was Dermot Mulroney. Not Dylan. Wait, Dylan McDermott is the is the guy from The Practice? No, the
I don't know.
Dermot Mulroney.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Dylan Mulroney. Yeah. Mulroney. Dermot McDermott. Anyway, there you go.
That's our love letter to the Night Stalker.
Love the Night Stalker.
I'm just trying to think.
And Halloween coming around the corner. Nothing better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Did we do
a 10 monster movie kind of thing? Did we do that?
Yes.
No, we didn't.
Pretty sure we did. In fact, we've done this whole Kolchak one before.
Did we?
Yeah.
We should do an episode on Deja Vu.
Yeah, well.
Or have we done that?
I think we did it before on this show.
No, wait a second. We did one on... No, we did scariest movies. No, we didn't. We did monster movies, didn't we?
We did a top 10 monster movie one last year. I'm positive.
That was a year ago?
Yeah, mine was terrible, and yours were pretty great.
Well, that's the show, isn't it?
I just wanted to point out, too, before we just get off the subject, because I'm just thinking about it. The show went into sci-fi. Do you remember, like, they had an alien episode?
No, that was what I was gonna ask you, and I got sidetracked.
And there was a robot episode called Mr. Ring. But the one that always kills me is there's one, and I cannot remember the name of it. But see if you've heard this plot before. Guys are mining. They find these spheres. They throw them away. And a monster starts killing them. Turns out those spheres are eggs.
Oh, interesting.
Does that sound familiar?
Out of Africa?
No, it's Devil in the Dark.
I'm kidding. What was it?
Star Trek.
It's the Horta.
Yeah. Yeah. They did it on Kolchak, too.
See, back then, you didn't have information at your fingertips where you could go, oh, clearly a ripoff. Hmm. You'd have to, like, tell your friends on the playground, go.
Except in every Starlog or anything, they would have that, you know, oh, Kolchak ripped off Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. That is, yeah.
But I'm sure that, you know, the science fiction nerds, if you take them out of the equation, I'm sure there's, like, 5 mod squads that stole a Dragnet script or, you know, like...
Don't go bagging on Link and the gang, okay?
Hey, dude.
That's a whole other episode.
1990, I never missed a 1 a.m. mod squad.
That was the other time you were unemployed.
I did. No, I just missed 8 a.m. math.
Oh. listen, can we get to the real crux of the episode, please? Can you finally wrap this up and tell us the big, exciting... news that you got the other day that someone got in touch with you that happens.
Oh,
to
yeah. I just, you know what? I get a lot of emails and I'm sorry, folks. If I haven't got back to you, I've gotten show ideas and comments, criticisms, which I greatly appreciate too.
Do we know really?
We do get a few. But that's fine.
Do we appreciate them?
I do because.
I'm kidding. Bring them on.
Most of them are done in a very sensible kind of like, hey guys, if you could, you know, most people have tact, you know.
If you could stop with the effing and jeffing, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. None of them are deer creeps. I got a shout out from a fellow who was looking for advice on value of a toy. It was an amazing toy. I've never seen it before. But it turns out he came to us because he was a fan. And, of course, I'll be replying to him shortly. But Stephen was really kind enough to really give us a real shot in the arm and an ego boost. And it turns out he's playing bass for the band Echo and the Bunnymen. So thank you very much for listening, and your kind words really paved a lot of ways for us over this weekend. It was really nice to know you're listening.
Yeah, and we haven't – I haven't spoken to him. Obviously, I've got the information from you, but this just thrills me that he's listening and digs what we're doing because – it is one of those. The world just got really small for me to get that text from you, and I didn't believe you. I was like, "Come on, really?" Like, but it's gratifying that anyone's listening, that anyone cares. But that was really a special little moment there that you told me that someone.
Well, you know, I tried to send you the good ones.
Feel free to send the ones that think I'm hate my voice, too overbearing. All that stuff too. I can pull all this back. I can peel it back.
Well, most of them are about your horrible politics and your liberal agenda.
Well, did we do that episode?
No, we are going to though.
Okay, we need to do that. Yeah, how the liberal agenda is making its way into Star Trek.
Is how the liberal agenda blow up computers? Because that's all I get from Star Trek.
On the Enterprise. How'd that happen? Well, it was 1966. Oh, it was? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm way behind. But thank you all for listening and sending any information. Please keep sending the gifts and the cakes. We, you know, never get tired of that.
I really appreciate all the pocket squares.
Pocket squares, and but you could send more jelly babies. Sure could use some more of those. And as always, to my... Wow! Did you hear?
Did you get some wheelies there?
Did you get that? Yeah, yeah. Someone's revving up the Evel Knievel stunt cycle out front. Apparently, as always, big thank you to my Canadian pal Brian Heiler across the pond.
Hey, that's me.
Not across the pond, but you know, across the wall.
Yeah,
that wall. When are they going to build the wall between America and Canada? By the
pretty
way,
pretty soon. Actually, I'm really thrilled.
I got to get over there before they build it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm gonna. It keeps us in.
Sneak in.
Yeah.
And thank you all for listening. What a great topic. Brian, thanks for bringing up Kolchak, and it brought up lots of cool memories for me. I hope it did for everyone else. And if it didn't, well, then I'm sad for you.
And look for us at the end of the month. We're going to do two this month, and next show is Godzilla. Spoilers.
It is. We did Godzilla.
No, we haven't.
All right, just checking to make
sure
you're...
We're about to. So I'd like you to watch every Godzilla movie ever made. See you in 2 weeks.
I'll do my best.
All right.
I'll start with the Broderick one.
Yeah, that's a good way to get your motivation going, because they only get better.
Get my base started, start maintaining, and then move on from there.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.